In today's episode, we're talking all about leadership and talent.
From Engagement, I'm David Millay, and this is Flip the Switch.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Flip the Switch, where we sit down with leaders in customer experience and employee experience, and we try to figure out what are the trends that they're paying attention to? What are the experiments that they're running? What are the principles that have guided them to success throughout their career? Then we take all those insights and we apply them to the world of sports and entertainment. Now, today's episode, I am super excited because we are sitting down with Len Perna from Turnkey ZRG. Now, if you don't know who Len is, I'll give you a quick background and then we're going to jump into the episode. Len and I first crossed paths professionally when I was at Disney Institute, and he was with Turnkey, specifically guiding the research part of the business, which he has since sold off and he'll talk about. But we were trying to figure out some different ways to marry what we were doing in customer experience to what they were doing on the research side of the world. And that was just one part of Turnkey. When Len founded Turnkey in 1996, the business really had two sides to it. It had the research and data side, but it also had this executive search function to it. And as the years went on, he sold the research part of the business and kept the executive search part of the business. And when we think about executive search, if you're not really familiar with it, what it basically is Len and his team gets hired by pro sports teams, college departments, to find the next head coach, to find the next AD, and provide recommendations and ask thought-provoking questions to the leaders of the organization so that they can make sure that they're hiring the right person for their culture. So obviously with what we talk about on the show, Len's got a really unique perspective into the different industries that they now serve under Turnkey ZRG of media, entertainment, sports, lifestyle, music. They're really seeing a really wide perspective of all things talent. And he's going to bring all those perspectives onto the show. So in this episode, we are going to talk about everything from how to stand out when there's a search firm looking for people to some of the best leadership or most underrated leadership traits that Len looks for, to what does the future look like and what would roles be that an organization should really consider implementing into their org structure. So I don't want to steal any more thunder from the show. Let's jump into it with Len Perna. Len, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, let's jump in. You and I have known each other back when Turnkey had research and we were trying to do things together when I was at Disney Institute and you guys were just Turnkey, but now you are so much more. So talk to us about a little bit of the evolution and where Turnkey ZRG is at today.
All right. First of all, just thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. Honored to be here with you and, you know, have known you and known your family for a really long time. So thanks for having me. Just really brief history. Turnkey originally was actually two different companies, Turnkey Intelligence and Turnkey Search. They were both started on the exact same day at the same moment. The brainchild of myself, because my philosophy at that point was to be successful in sports and entertainment, you've got to be great on the people side of the business, and you have to have the right information and data to feed those people. So started both of those 27 years ago. About 4 years ago, I sold Turnkey Intelligence to MarketCast Holdings. It's still going. They still do Voice of the Fan for the NFL. They have a huge project with Major League Baseball. So they're doing a lot of survey data and sponsorship valuation stuff all across sports and entertainment at MarketCast. And I'm still an equity holder in that business. And then the other business, Turnkey Search, I sold about a year ago to ZRG. And so I'm still running the business inside ZRG. I rolled my equity into ZRG. ZRG is the seventh largest search firm in the world. They're a global search firm, 250 managing directors, top line revenue in the range of about 160 million. So it's a big search firm, global search firm. And I essentially run the sports, music, entertainment, and lifestyle practice inside ZRG. Been doing that for the last 16 months. It's an absolute blast. I can't wait to tell you about it.
Well, and let's jump into that because I think you guys are so much more than just a search firm now. You guys have really turned into somewhat of a talent advisory firm, which is perfect for what we talk about with our clients and what we talk about on the show. So talk to us about kind of that shift and some of the different services you guys are offering now from a talent advisory perspective.
You know, listen, David, it's a great question because nowadays, a lot of the problems that businesses are having are really around talent and people. And so our company is built around solving people problems. That's what we do. It's not just about doing executive recruiting and finding new talent. So I'll give you an example. We recently acquired a business that's expert in culture. They're the number one culture advisory firm in the world. They do business all over the planet. And, you know, aligning culture and strategy seems easy. It's incredibly difficult, and these people are experts at it. So we have a culture consultancy. We've just bought a company that's an absolute expert in supply chain. All the supply chain problems that everyone's having all over the world, we now have a group that, yes, they do executive recruiting in supply chain, but they're also experts in helping companies iron out problems in supply chain. And I can give you example after example where we feel like there's an intersection between going out to find talent, but then being able to help a company set that talent up for success and be able to provide additional services around making sure that talent succeeds once we find that talent. And once they're in-house, being able to retain that talent so that they don't walk out the door and go to a competitor. So we play in all of those spaces as a full service talent advisory firm.
We're going to get into this later and we'll still get into this later for the sake of flow of this show. But I mean, I think so many people think about once we hire the person, they're there, that we did our job, we wipe our hands clean. And I think with a lot of traditional search firms, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but that would tend to be the case with some firms that you could place somebody, but whether they stay or not, and whether they're a good fit long-term is often not super evident in the first 90 days or even the first year. I know a lot of people back from my days at Disney. We had a lot of great leaders, but we had a lot of leaders that they were good and they'd move on every year and a half or so to the next part of the organization because they didn't want anybody to find out that they actually weren't that good. But so we'll talk all about that in a little bit here.
Well, you're hitting on a great point because like we just acquired a firm less than 30 days ago called Brimstone Consulting. And Brimstone Consulting does exactly what you just said, which is that when you put a senior level leader inside a company, theoretically, you've had problems inside that company and you're going to try to solve it by putting a new person in there. But putting a new person in there in and of itself actually doesn't solve your problem. And so Brimstone Consulting is all about not only just coaching the person that got put in there, but looking at all the rest of the teammates that are around that person, where are the problems? How do we break down the walls? And their expertise is in figuring out how to pave the way for success, not only for the placement that you just made, but for the whole team that they're involved with.
Yeah, that's a huge value add from just doing search to truly, I mean, what you're describing really does feel much more like talent advisory throughout the journey of a lifetime of an employee. I want to start. I mean, for me, everything from a talent perspective, so much of it comes down to leadership. And what you guys are famous for, Turnkey specifically, is leader placement, right? That's where historically you guys have done an incredible job, whether it's placing athletic directors or CEOs and presidents of pro teams. You guys have really made a name for yourselves by placing great leaders in great organizations. So talk to us a little bit about how you go about identifying what a culture looks like and trying to figure out who's the right leader for that culture. What are some of the key things that you look for when you're going through that process?
First of all, I don't think any search firm is good enough at understanding where the culture needs to go. They may be able to do enough discovery to understand where the culture is today. But it would be very rare. I'm not aware of any search firm, by the way, including ours, that really can suss out where does the culture need to be in order to be properly aligned with strategy and really make for success. One of the things that we're doing right now is we're actually building an algorithm. I just finished about 4 hours of test taking from our culture company as a guinea pig, basically. But we're building some algorithms so that we can do some very quick looking at where is the culture today, where is the culture need to be, and then how do we find candidates that are going to be accretive to where that culture needs to go. So we are really putting a lot of money and investment and time into understanding how talent fits into culture. What we look for, what I like to look for, because I've placed a lot of CEOs and presidents, head coaches, athletic directors, commissioners, is the ability to be strong at self-evaluation and self-awareness. Leaders need to be able to understand how they come off, how they land on people, how people react to them. It's impossible to build followership as a leader if you yourself don't really fully understand how you're perceived. So what I have found as the number one skill for leaders, true leaders of businesses, is the ability to understand your own persona, your own strengths, your own weaknesses, and where you can build a team around yourself without thinking you have all the answers or that you're good at everything, because there is no leader that has all the answers and is good at everything. So I'm looking for self-awareness as the number one skill.
Okay. So without giving away the secret sauce, and you can feel free to be like, hey, that's the secret sauce. Without giving it away, how would an organization go about identifying that? I'm like trying to think about questions or scenario-based questions that I might ask that would shed light on whether that leader was self-aware or not. And nothing's coming to mind right now in the second. So, I mean, how do you actually identify that that's a skill set or a trait that a leader possesses?
You need to spend time with people, and you know, you can't really test for this. There are many different types of assessments that we use, but these assessments tend to be good at looking at skills, thinking patterns, behavior in groups, and things like that. I haven't found an assessment that really tells you about self-awareness. And so the way I'm looking for self-awareness is through deeply understanding a candidate and being able to talk to people around that candidate. Believe it or not, you can do enough due diligence. You can do enough vetting, talk to people who have worked with this individual, either above them, below them, or peers to them, and you will understand very quickly. I mean, within 4 or 5 conversations, whether or not a person is self-aware, and you know, it'll come out in the wash. Believe me, you cannot hide the fact that you're not self-aware.
No, I believe that. So many questions here. As we're working with different organizations, especially around culture, and as you mentioned right now, I mean, it's such a big thing right now, because retaining talent and attracting top talent with the great resignation or the turnover tsunami, however you want to call it, for the first time, it feels like in sports, employee experience and culture is at the top of everyone's mind, where it used to be, next employee up, everybody wants to work here. When you think about evaluating a leader, really, but self-awareness is a huge thing that you're looking for. Does that differ when you're hiring, let's say, an individual contributor that's at a manager level or a frontline person? I mean, maybe not a frontline person, but more that individual contributor at a manager or director level for a smaller organization. Is that different?
It does. Yeah. I mean, it's we're talking here kind of in generalities, but every single position, every single situation, even for one position that may be the same, but if it's in a different situation or if it's a different time in the cycle of the job, you're looking for different things. So it's really hard to kind of generalize across all these different jobs.
Yep. But go ahead.
No, go ahead, David.
I was going to say, I mean, if you're changing up what you're looking for based on each role, I was going to take us down a different rabbit hole now of how do you create cultural consistency if the questions maybe that you're asking or the things that you're looking for are different every time?
We believe that there are 6 archetypes of culture, and everyone falls into those 6 archetypes. And so what we are doing as we, and this is we is, it's a company called Walking the Talk. And I encourage you to actually have them on your show and get to know Walking the Talk. And because they're looking at separating out the different kinds of behaviors and approaches and thinking patterns in each of those six archetypes. And they believe everyone falls into one of those six archetypes. And so there are exercises that can be done to figure out of, let's say, like the senior leadership team. It could be all the coaches on a coaching staff, by the way, or it could be the C-suite level at a business. If they're each different archetypes, or if they each tend to gravitate towards the same archetype. And you don't need to all be in the same archetype to all be aligned. As a matter of fact, some of these archetypes are complementary with each other. But it is important to know who's in which archetype and whether or not they're conflicting with each other. And that's the path we're going down to really make sure that when we're adding to the mix that's in a complementary way.
That makes a ton of sense. And I think rather than go into those archetypes, we'll just have to have those guys on the show and we'll let them dive into it. Something else that we're going to bounce all over because I just have too many questions. And I tried to have some kind of flow to this conversation, but I'm like, it's just going to go all over the place. One of the things that I'm looking at here in my Google Doc, I was thinking about is something that you and I have bonded over in that sometimes the organization, it changes what they're looking for over time, right? They might think they want one thing, but as you get into the conversation, you really realize they kind of need something else. So when you're going about role identification, I think this happens with a lot of organizations. We think we need one thing, but really we need something else. What are some of those conversations or questions that you ask your clients to help them identify what they really are looking for in that role?
Our role as an advisor on talent is to be able to bring the marketplace to a client. And we're not guarantors of the marketplace, but we are very knowledgeable about who's in the market, what it costs to get certain people at certain levels of experience, and what the skill sets are found in different types of jobs. So sometimes you do have a client that is, let's say, written a draft position description and they've thrown everything in there but the kitchen sink, and they've put things into the position description that aren't commonly found in a single role. But so maybe they have two or three jobs and they're like, boy, if we could just find all of this in one person, we could knock out three positions with one hire. And so our job is to try to, you know, sometimes let them know that it's a real long shot to be able to find one person that has all of these things in a single job description. And so we're advisors like that. We are not afraid to state our opinion. And frankly, we're not afraid to walk away from a potential surge if we don't feel we can be successful in hitting it. Because in a situation like that, there might be one person out of 10 million that fits the job description that the client wants. So, you know, we're really talent advisors. We have a good sense of what the marketplace is, how things line up, what things cost to get certain levels of experience. And we bring that to bear early in the process.
Are there any specific examples that you can think of that this kind of shines light? I actually am thinking of a role that you asked me on. This is years ago. This is an NFL team that was looking for something. And I looked at what they were looking for. I'm like, that's what my entire company does with like across six of us. Maybe they'll find somebody, but is there any examples that you can in particular think of that comes to light?
Well, you know, we recently did a search for a new organization called the Professional Tennis Players Association. And almost nobody has heard of this unless you're a professional tennis player. But the way the tennis industry lays out, there's the ATP, there's the WTA, and they profess to represent players, except that they don't really do that. And so players, unfortunately, in tennis make a much smaller percentage, about 13% of gross revenue, compared with in the NBA, players make 50% of the revenue. In the NFL, it's like 51% of the revenue. So in tennis, this new organization has been put together. And at first, we weren't sure what this was. Is this a labor union? Because if it's a labor union, then we're looking at lawyers for the CEO job. No, it's probably not a labor union, but maybe it's a not-for-profit. So maybe are we looking at people in the charitable space? So, okay, maybe the CEO comes from philanthropy. No, that doesn't feel right either. Is this a licensing job? You know, so if now we're looking at a licensing job. But what ultimately happened was, you know, we decided to pick a CEO, it hasn't been announced yet, that has a strong licensing background, but also has an operating history for events and other things. And this is a complete startup. They will start off looking at this as a licensing job, but ultimately it could grow to include events, series, tours, things like that. So as a search firm and as a talent advisory firm, our job is to just bring the marketplace, understand the marketplace, bring choices, and be adaptable and be able to pivot if a client wants to change their mind and look at it differently. It happens all the time.
Okay, now this is opening another can of worms for me. So coming from Disney, right, big proponent, and thinking about culture, big proponent of promoting from within. But with the changing landscapes that all the industries that you're working in right now, sports, media, entertainment, lifestyle, music, those industries are changing like 100 miles a minute. So how do you balance promoting from within when oftentimes, like in the example you just used, the organization's vision should be going in a different spot, but they want to promote from within because this person's been loyal and they've worked here for 20 years and they know the landscape, but they don't have the chops in this new direction. I mean, how do you think about balancing hiring from within and searching from within versus going out into the broader marketplace, as you described?
And, you know, one of the things that we're often asked to do is to interview and consider internal candidates. That's a lot of coaching hires. You know, there are assistant coaches we're looking at, athletic director searches. We're looking at the deputy AD, all sorts of business positions where, you know, there's a strong staff in place. Hey, is there somebody locally here that is already in our organization that we think fits for this? And it's very important to take that very seriously because they've got institutional knowledge. They've got, in many cases, relationships with corporate partners and things like that. So, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, we're doing a search for a new athletic director at Penn State right now. And Penn State, this is a, you know, highly coveted job. If you're in athletics administration, the Penn State athletics director's job is one of the best jobs on the planet. They're highly resourced.
They get to work with us on a regular basis. Who would not want that job?
Exactly. And so we, you know, we are considering internal candidates and external candidates. Scott Sidwell's the deputy AD. He's definitely under consideration. He's definitely being thought of. And we have to really look at him and think about him at almost like he's an external candidate and give him, you know, a lot of consideration because he brings a lot to the table as an internal candidate. You know, on the other side of that is we're also being asked who is the best out there, the best fit for this. Who could bring more to the table? Who could bring a fresh perspective? So you're constantly having to balance, you know, the institutional knowledge that exists on the inside versus a fresh perspective and a new kind of way of doing things. Do we want to have a little pivot here and bring somebody from the outside? And we don't make those decisions. Our job, again, is bring the marketplace to the president, and the president makes that decision ultimately.
Well, and I think it's like you said, you guys ask really good prompting questions that get those senior leaders to maybe think differently about the situation that they're in. As we talk about evolution and what that evolving landscapes that you're working in or so, how have some of the traits changed over time, especially since COVID? Have there been new traits that have started to shine a little bit brighter or become more important over the last couple of years than they were, say, 5 years ago?
I mean, anything digital, first of all, I mean, if there's anything that every organization needs to be deep in, it's what I would call content, you know, content first, and whether that's content marketing, content sales. So, you know, people tend to think about that as digital. There's a lot of different ways to think about content and to think about digital. But if you're an organization and you're not deep in those areas, you better get deep there fast. And that wasn't really the case, I'd say, 5 years ago. The next one is strategy. You know, we just filled a strategy role at Illich Companies, which is the Detroit Tigers, Detroit Red Wings, Fox Theater, and all those properties. And we put a senior vice president of, you know, strategy, project management, these organizations are all getting bigger, and there are things that come along that don't fit neatly into, oh, that's marketing, or that's sales, or that's operations, or that's finance. There are things that touch all these different departments. Who handles those? Where do those land? And so a lot of organizations now are looking at this kind of, I would say, you know, top level. It's not just a thinker. People think strategy is somebody that just can, you know, is super smart and can think their way through anything. It's got to be somebody who can roll up their sleeves and project manage stuff across a cross-functional organization. They're highly matrixed there. And we put a guy named Ryan Gustafson in there who, you know, Harvard Business School, but you know what? It wasn't the Harvard Business School piece that we liked. What we really liked is this is a person that had rolled up their sleeves in a bunch of different places and really figured out how to do a better job on the ticketing side, on the business intelligence side, on the sponsorship side. How do we get better there on the marketing side? So he had a lot of hands-on experience plus an amazing intellect. He was perfect for the role.
I love it. That's like, I mean, we had, speaking of strategy and the digital side of things as well, one of my favorite underrated episodes that we've done in the 100 plus episodes is with Moon Javed over at 49ers. And he was in that strategy role prior to the pandemic with them, working on all kinds of new things, like how do we go create a gym using our brand as a license, right? How do we create other types, roll out different types of technology? And you're right, to that point, it's not just somebody that thinks. He's got to be able to roll up the sleeves and say, all right, nobody else knows how to do this. Guess I'm going to go take a whack at it.
I mean, Moon's one of the best there is out there, and just absolutely love Moon and what he's been able to do there. And you're right. He's really a project manager because his job is the, you know, ideas are a dime a dozen. It's being able to implement that idea across a place like the 49ers that becomes difficult. And he's able to do that.
Yeah. And I'm going to call him a project driver for sake of that. But well, let's think about, I want to think, talk about, you know, as we try to get the best talent in, specific process wise, what does that look like from an interview structure? Are you doing different rounds? Are you putting them into like case studies? And one of my best friends just got hired by Facebook. He's been interviewing since November. It's now mid-April. And he's gone through 8 rounds of case studies and different types of things. So what are some of y'all's processes for how somebody goes through a search? And maybe what are some of your favorite unorthodox practices?
We have a pretty unorthodox practice at our whole firm because we actually score individual attributes that we break out at the beginning of a search. And I call it kind of Moneyball style. So, you know, if you're thinking about baseball, you know, like what's this person's speed down to first base? What's the exit speed with the ball coming off the bat? You know, what's their ability to do all these different things and breaking them down into their individual components to figure out if it's a 5-tool player or a 3-tool player? Well, we do that actually with our interviews now. We will get with a client and we'll say, what are the top 8 things you must have in this role? And it could be, they could be skills that are in the job. They could be culture pieces. They could be leadership pieces. But we break those down. We build an interview script around it. And then when we interview candidates, we're looking for these 8 things. We're asking questions around these 8 things. And then when the interview is over, we go into our portal and we give an individual score for each of these 8 things. All of those things roll up into an algorithm and get to a overall score. There's no other search firm doing this. We are the only firm that has built a system to do this. And it's like the way you would draft an NFL player, right? It's like, what's the speed in the 40? How high can they jump? What's their bench press number? That's what we've done in business now for this. And we're the only ones that do it.
Too cool. I love the way you described it as like Moneyball style hiring. That's awesome. Go ahead.
Well, that's kind of the interview part. To answer your question about whether or not we give homework assignments, yes, we absolutely give homework assignments when they're appropriate. There are certain kinds of jobs that really lend themselves to, you know, giving a hypothetical situation or giving a piece of work to somebody and seeing how they deal with it. You know, there's always the worry of, Are we giving them, you know, they're not hired yet, so are we giving them too much work to do?
Right.
But it does tell you how interested somebody is in a role if they're willing to put a little bit of time on the weekend to do a project. So we do that. We do this thing called PXT assessments. PXT assessments are how you work in a group, how collaborative are you, how open are you to other people's ideas. So between PXT assessments, the scoring that we do, the homework assignments that we do, the interviews that we run, and then we also have an interesting thing where we ask our clients to also score the candidates. Because a lot of times clients can lack a little discipline when it's their turn to interview a candidate and they sort of haven't prepared. Maybe they haven't looked at the resume and the, you know, before they get on the Zoom call, and then all of a sudden they're in an interview. So we feel like if we can prepare our clients better to do a better interview and then go onto our system and enter the scores that they think the candidate deserves, it becomes a more productive interview even on that side of it. So we've added a lot of technology and scoring to our systems here, I think, to make us better at making better hiring decisions. And hopefully those people stick longer, and it's proven that they do.
That's huge from an accountability standpoint. I mean, so many of our clients are running a million miles a minute that I could see on your end that they could go into that interview and they've just, you know, they had a coach step down and they had to get a contract done with somebody else. And next thing you know, they're in this interview and they're asking, so, you know, what's your, what are you bad at? Or something just really basic. I'm blanking as I'm on the spot of a really bad interview question, but it's great that you're there to kind of be able to prep them and guide them and help them through the process as well.
I guess the only other thing I'll add at the end is, you know, I work with a lot of billionaires. Okay. I work with people that own sports teams and, you know, they don't do a lot of interviews. And so a lot of times when it gets to the point where, you know, they want to hire a CEO and give them the keys to an NFL team or an NBA team, I'm there in the room with them. I'm sitting in the room right next to them. And I've given them, here's some ideas for questions you might want to ask. You know, here are the things that I think we need to think about for this candidate. And I think it's just a level of service and responsiveness to a client to make sure that the, you know, the interview is successful, that the owner feels like they got the information that they needed in a comfortable situation. So it's important to be there. And that's where I am.
What's one of like your favorite failures in that situation where like something, it could be, I'm thinking specifically from like a hiring spot where you really put forth someone and it just didn't pan out, but you learned a ton from it. Maybe it could be a failure on that side of the house, or it could be on just broader business, but that's going to open up another can of worms.
So a couple years ago, I was hired by Derek Jeter, who was the incoming owner and president, CEO of the Florida Marlins. And we were going to go out and look for a president. So he was going to be in the CEO title. He had the GM reporting to him and he wanted to have a business person. We wound up putting Chip Bowers in there as the president, and Chip was only there for a year. And that's, you know, that's not enough. Like for us, somebody has to be in a job 3 to 5 years for it to be considered a successful placement. So the fact that he was let go after only a year is a total failure. You know, it was a tough situation because on the one hand, Derek is an absolutely great guy. He really, truly is a wonderful human being. I think he really didn't want a president. I think he really wanted to learn the business side himself. He knows the baseball side, but he hadn't really known the business side. And I think he felt like Chip was in his way. And he kept trying to get Chip out of the way so he could dig into tickets, so he could dig into sponsorships, and he could dig in. He's not a micromanager, but he can go deep. Derek is an incredibly smart guy. Chip was in the way. And I think after a while, he just decided, I don't want a team president. I want to be the team president. And so that's a failure that I still kind of smart over.
What was like the biggest learning from that lesson, from that situation?
I had an inkling at the beginning that, you know, maybe the board was really encouraging Derek to hire this position. The Florida Marlins, really tough market. There's just so many challenges down there to get people to come out to the ball games and to drive audience down there. And so I think the board kind of felt, you know, Derek, you're going to have all this reporting to you, but you focus on baseball. Let's hire somebody to focus on business. And I kind of sensed from the beginning, I didn't think Derek wanted to do it that way. And so the learning is trust your gut. And I think I should have raised these issues with him before we pulled the trigger on this hire. I think I should have really pressure tested whether or not Derek Jeter really wanted this position.
Trust your gut becomes really interesting in this hiring process, I think, because if I'm thinking about Chip, and I knew Chip back from his Orlando days, I mean, from a situation perspective, he seems like he would be great on paper, right? Had been with the Magic when they were both good and not as good, and still managed to do great from an attendance perspective. Then saw a ton of success with the Warriors out there, right? Like, so it kind of makes sense on paper.
And he's doing great now. I mean, he's the president of Elevate. You know, we were talking about the 49ers exactly. before.
And Elevate.
Chip is the Elevate president, is doing an absolutely great job and really driving that business forward. But I think if you had Chip on here and he was really being honest with you, he has a lot of learnings too. So we can all learn from a situation that didn't work out. I think I learned some stuff. I think Chip did. My guess is that Derek Jeter did as well, because now he's out of the Marlins. So it's all good. As long as you have a lifelong learning approach,
yeah,
it's all good.
No question. When you think about more like out of the box situations, what have been some of the biggest, and this, think about this from a broader just talent advisory perspective, doesn't necessarily need to be search. As you guys are much bigger than that, what have been some of like the most out of the box recommendations that you've given to an organization? And I'm thinking about maybe one of those recommendations where you're like, I don't know how this client's going to receive this, but this is what feels right to me. And they're probably going to laugh me out of the room, or they're going to love me for it. Can you think of any of those stories that are an example that was just a really out of the box recommendation?
I mean, here's kind of something that's pretty recent, which is, we had done the commissioner search for the ACC, and they wound up hiring Jimmy Phillips, who had been the athletic director at Northwestern. And so Jimmy's doing a great job. He's a very traditional, conventional candidate to be ACC commissioner. On the heels of that, almost immediately, we were hired to do another commissioner one for the Pac-12. And when we started out this search, they said, we want somebody just like Jim Phillips. We want a traditional athletic director type, somebody who understands all the different moving pieces of intercollegiate athletics. We've got name, image, likeness going on. We've got this Alston lawsuit. We've got all these things happening. We don't want to take a chance on a non-traditional candidate. Well, 3 months later, we're down to like the final four, and it's becoming apparent that we've got this one out-of-the-box candidate, George Kliakov, who had spent a career kind of, he was the CEO, he was the first CEO of Hulu. He was the first chief digital officer of NBC Universal. He was the number three person at MLBAM, Major League Baseball Advanced Media. So he had a strong digital background. He had a streaming background. You know, he also had a very traditional television background. He had a league background, but he had not spent 1 minute in college sports. And so we got to the end and, you know, they asked my opinion and I said, listen, I think he really is the person to be able to understand not only where we are today, but get us to where we need to be with all the changes going on in the media landscape, consumption patterns changing. He was at MGM. And so he was pushing forward the sports betting initiative for MGM. So how unconventional is it for these, you know, intercollegiate higher education institutions hiring somebody out of sports betting to come in and run their conference? It was totally out of the box, and he's crushing it. He's doing an absolutely great job. They love him. He was a student athlete, so he understands what intercollegiate athletics is all about, but he just had a background that didn't make sense at the time.
But I think that's, again, the value that you guys provide is that, And we think about it from our perspective in this way as well, because we're working across clients, across industries, you can kind of pick up on broader trends of where the business and where the industry is going that the client, who oftentimes is grinding on the day to day, can't pick up on because they don't have time to pick their head up. They're moving on to the next event. They're moving on to the next experience. And I think you guys bring that perspective of being able to see, hey, here's where the industry is going. Like, this is what you guys should be thinking about.
It's the number one point of differentiation for Turnkey ZRG, which is that we are totally embedded in this industry. When we go to like the conferences, we don't see any of the other executive recruiters there. Or if they're there, they're out in the lobby. Like, I'm actually sitting inside these conferences. I'm taking notes. I'm really focused on the content that's going on there because I need to know the business. And the better all of us at Turnkey ZRG understand where the business is headed, the better we're going to be as talent advisors. And I think that's what makes us the best, is we're deeply, deeply, deeply embedded in this industry 365 days a year. We understand where it is and where it's going. And most of the other executive recruiting firms are very transactional. They just want to fill jobs, get a fee, and keep moving. And that's not who we are.
On that note, if you could build, like, let's call it an athletic department, tends to be who we do the most amount of work with. And we've got a big athletic department contingency that listens to the show. So if you could build a front office or an athletics department from scratch, I think about Charlotte FC's chief fan officer role. What are some of those new roles that you might plug into that department and build around?
I honestly believe that college athletic departments should not be outsourcing to, the Learfields of the world. And it's nothing against Learfield at all. I really believe that having a direct relationship with corporate partners is the key to success of not only your sponsorship business, but also in ticket sales, in community, in connecting with student athletes, in connecting with students on campus. Those corporate relationships can play such an important role on so many different levels. And yet so many of the Power Five have outsourced that to somebody else to have that relationship. So I think it's a huge mistake. I do think it'll change, but I've been saying this for a long time, so I'm probably not right about it.
You and me both. The number of conversations from an experience standpoint, as we're customer journey mapping, looking at that experience, the number of times where an idea has been crushed because the third party has to meet their numbers. And again, like you said, love a lot of people that are at Learfield, but the model just doesn't seem to fit for where the world is going.
I do think at some point there's going to be some structural changes in the, let's call it the Power Five, where they'll start to look and act a little bit more like a pro sports team for football and men's basketball and women's basketball. I think those three sports in particular lend themselves well to treating it like it's more of a professional sport. I know there's a lot of people in higher education that might cringe at that, but those sports, I do think you'll start to see college athletic departments really focusing in on how do we do a better job of connecting all the dots between our corporate partners, our student athletes, especially with name, image, likeness now. It's going to kind of force us down that road. And I actually think it'll be a good thing for student athletes and for the athletic departments in the schools, as well as for the corporate partners, by the way.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, a couple more questions. Oh, wait. Any other roles that you can think of off the top of your head? I feel like I was cutting you short on that question.
I talked about strategy before. I think in your area, to be honest with you, and this is not to give you a plug, but looking at student athletes as customers and really focusing on what is their experience, and maybe experience has become overused, but it's not just experience going to a football game or a basketball game. What is their experience walking across campus? What is their experience doing every single thing they have to do when they're on campus? And I don't think that higher education is thinking like that right now, but the students are the customers. And I think if they did think like that, I think there would be changes. And that's where I know your company comes in. And I think you're in a really good spot. I think you're in a place where the puck is going to, and I would expect that more will start to think like that.
I appreciate that. I totally couldn't agree with you more. A couple of questions before we close here. One more kind of real meaty question, and then kind of words of advice to our listeners. But last meaty question here: if candidates aren't on your radar during a search, how can they get your attention? Or if they're looking to get the attention of a hiring manager, whether it's from a search firm or a key hiring manager for a role, what's the best way, most effective way that you've seen someone go out and be able to get that attention?
With the searches that we do, we like to post all of our searches on our job board. Not too many other search firms do that. I think a lot of those firms like to work in secret. We don't think we should be working in secret. So if somebody wants to get on our radar, it's really very easy. Go to our job board, put in an application, and we'll look at it and we'll call you back. So it's super easy to get on our radar for a position. I think the other thing is, don't be afraid to go direct to somebody that owns a team or a CEO of a team and try to push your way into their radar. There's lots of different ways to do that. You don't have to be that pushy, but you need to have good ideas. You need to be able to present them well. You need to keep it brief because people are really busy. But if it's okay to go to the search firm, it's also okay to go directly to the employer.
Love that. And that's one of the most underrated ways that I talk to people when they ask me, how do I get in there? I'm like, I hit apply on the resume. I'm like, so did 300 other people. Like you gotta knock down some doors some other way. As it relates to that, are there any quick ways that you can, you know, a resume stands out to you guys or the algorithms that you guys have when you're initially looking at it? Obviously changes based on the role, but anything off the top of your head?
I mean, just first of all, we don't have computers looking at resumes, so we don't have an algorithm. We do have the ability to kind of upload a resume easily. We have an algorithm that can do that, but we don't have a computer sort of assessing a resume. The best thing to do on a resume, honestly, is really focus on performance for every bullet point. I actually recommend that every single bullet point on your resume begin with a number. And that number can be a percentage, or it could even be a raw number. It could be a incremental number, you know, year over year growth, or it could be, you know, took it from X to Y. You've got to be quantitative in a resume. To just simply say that you managed people and you managed a business, it's not good enough. You have to show your impact, and impact is numbers. So put the KPIs in there. Don't worry if you can't put the dollars in there, then convert them all to percentages and show what kind of an impact you had on a business. That is the number one thing we have people do. And sometimes with very high level executives, you know, I'll get with them and I'll say, let us show you what your resume needs to look like. Yeah. And we try to help them write a good resume, because it's not just good enough to be the current CEO of whatever team. You've got to show what you did.
Even if it's number of events managed, number of people that worked underneath you that you led, right? There, number of years that you worked there, right? Everybody has numbers, whether or not it's in your performance review or not. Well, Len, any final pieces of advice to give our listeners for the show?
Believe in yourself, be confident, persist. You know, I think it really makes sense to just fight through the bad days. There's going to be bad days. Not everything's going to go great. Fight through them. And I would just say, think big, like dream big, swing big, go for the big stuff. There's always time to go for the smaller wins, but I'd go for big, big, big wins. That's what I believe in doing. And I think it makes a difference.
I think for the artwork for this show, we're just going to Photoshop you onto Ted Lasso's body and put a big believe sign on it and say, hey, that's the final piece of advice from Len. So it's been great having you on the show, Len. I really appreciate the time and look forward to our next conversation.
David, love it. Thank you again. Really appreciate it.
Hey guys, before you head out, just wanted to say thank you so much for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. That helps more of your peers find the show as they search for ways to get better in their own roles. But this podcast is just a small part of what we do at Engagement. In our normal day in the office, we're crazy focused on helping athletic departments and sports and entertainment companies generate more revenue by becoming more customer-centric. To see how we might be able to help your organization, visit engagementpartners.com to learn more. Download a free guide, check out our blogs and case studies, or schedule a call with us if you want to see how we can help with your particular objectives. Our goal is to help you create deeper connections with fans and generate more revenue. So when you're with us, hopefully you find a nugget or two that helps your cause.